wants to happen, right?
Yeah.
And my big learning is to not try to force my healing into others. It's so tempting for me, I don't know about you guys, when I find something that really works. Now I'm fasting, I want everyone else to fast. Or now I'm doing breath work, I want everyone else to do breath work, because that will heal them. So how to stay in that space of loving acceptance, but how to still be available if someone does come to us for healing, you know, to still be able to offer them. That's a dance that I'm doing.
Listening, I find, is really a portal. Yeah. Listening on my end and willingness on their end. Where listening meets willingness, immense movements can happen. But if one isn't willing to heal or interested in healing or moving energy or looking into themselves or approaching some feeling that they're having or moving some addiction, it's not going to move. It just won't. Very likely. You know, and then if that person is willing and I'm not listening, I'm not attuning myself to their energy, I'm not meeting them there and opening myself as like a let's be here as one for a moment. If that's not there, I'm going to be entirely ineffective because I'm just telling them prescriptions. I'm just saying, oh, do this, oh, do that. But I'm not even with them. You know, we're not connected in that. Oh, do this thing. Here's this plant. You know, nah, that doesn't work. And so where there's that listening and that willingness and they meet, synergy can happen.
This reminder that our very energy field can be healing if we're in a good space. And every human has this capacity. It's not like as healing facilitators, our energy field is that special. I mean, I'm sure there's elements, but like everyone has this capacity to just be there, you know, to remind ourselves of the power of presence. I guess that's the feminine, right? The masculine likes to have words and solutions. It's just this sense of being presence. And there was an interesting lesson I had to learn about just the very act of presence. Years ago, there was this famous quote by Marianne Williamson, which is beautiful. It's about allow your light to shine. I don't know if you know this quote, and I don't exactly remember how it goes, but it's something like, who are you to play small, you know, embody your light and shine it into the world. And for many years, that was a powerful quote for me that I used, because I was always holding back my light. And so when I really stepped into, you know, more into who I truly embody in this world, and I really became happy in myself and confident, I'd walk into a room, I could see that I can light up a space. So I started to really practice that. And then I noticed I reached a point where a lot of the time it would be amazing, and a lot of the times people got kind of annoyed with all of my excitement and all of my light and all of that. And I started to really question it. Is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong? Is there something I'm missing here? Many times I offered healing to people and pushed me away. I'm really confused. And the medicine really gave me some beautiful answers through examples. And one night she showed me that in images, that I would walk into a space all shiny and uninhibited and open-hearted. And it was threatening to their demons, to their darkness. Now, of course, I was then saying to the medicine, well, what's wrong with that? Shouldn't I heal them? And then she started showing me, no, my darling, remember the first night? This life is not about being healed. This is duality. You came here to play the game of light and dark. In that, there is no bad in the dark or good in the light. That is the whole misconception. And as long as you judge the dark as bad and evil, you're going to get in trouble. So can you accept the seemingly unacceptable, the destruction? Despite your earth grief, can you keep your heart open in the face of destruction? Despite people attacking you, can you find a way to still love them? Of course, not in a passive way, come on, hit me in the face. You can protect yourself. But can you be that loving by truly knowing who you are? And then she goes, next level is to walk into a space. You want to shine your light. And you decide to just hold it in a little bit. And I'm like, why would I do that? She took me on a journey so I could practice it. And I did. And I found myself giggling. like just knowing I'm in this game and these people are still not aware, doesn't make me better than them. Just hold it in. This is the journey. They need to suffer. Because if I see someone suffer, I want to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Let them suffer. Because that's what they need to go through. Because if you suffer, you'll take away their game. And I asked them, so Mother Ayahuasca, like, what game are you talking about? She goes, that's it. Imagine you're playing a game with your friend. You're playing level 9 with the joystick. And she really showed me this really visually. You're playing level 9, he's playing level 4. And you finish level 9, you put the thing aside, and you see him playing level 4, and you go, oh, you grab his joystick, and you take him to level 5. The guy's going to be upset with you, right? He just ruined his game. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's how she showed it to me, and that was such an aha moment. I'm like, so it's completely okay for someone to suffer. And in that moment, if I was to look even more honest at myself, the reason I want to heal them is I want to feel connected to them.
Mm.
Why does it feel a bit lonely? And that in of itself is still selfish. Mm. So she goes, you got to find the connection inside of you. Got to just shine your light wherever it's wanted. Be you at all means, you know, don't dim your light too much, but just sometimes hold it in a little bit in the understanding that it can be upsetting. And that's not always going to serve you. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. And that's for you to discern. For me, that was such a powerful lesson.
Yeah.
And in the light of acceptance, you give people space to breathe and they might actually find a way to come to you. I had so many examples in my life where I was the wounded healer in relationships, and that there was a subtle non-acceptance of this human form in me wanting them to heal.
Yeah.
And it was so annoying for them. And I was so confused, and then I got frustrated.
Mm.
And now I understand that I was being annoying.
Yeah.
And if I could just love them, and like you said, listen, and just accept, and also sometimes choose to walk away,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. And it's often a reflection of our own capacity to accept our own darkness, you know, our own suffering.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the ways that, like, damn, that really did happen, didn't it? Wow. And finding acceptance in you know, the game that we've been playing, you know, and say, okay, yeah, I can find acceptance for that experience in my life, you know. And through that acceptance, what I'm hearing in what you're expressing is, you know, through that self-acceptance comes the capacity to accept others where they're at, and to just meet them there, you know, and that itself is beautiful. And people do sense it, where they're like, oh, I'm being perceived as not right, you know, and that doesn't feel good. And like what you're sharing about suffering, the image that was in my mind as you shared that is a pot boiling medicinal leaves. And like the medicine has to cook. And those leaves, one could consider them being in boiling water as suffering. But it's releasing the medicine. And the same is true for us. When we're in that pot of boiling water, the medicine is released from us, or is made available, let's say, through that process of, you know, being cooked in Earth's fires.
And that shame and guilt you're saying is so big. And even today, I find it in myself.
Yeah.
You know, I reach out to James and like, oh, this is a guy I want to visit. I send him a little message. First thought is, he's probably too busy, or, you know, I don't know, does he really want me to come? Like, okay. Whatever, you know, send them the message. The good news is that all those inner child rejection fears are pretty much at a stage they don't affect me anymore. I just go old stories. I go, I don't feel any anxiety. Like, so years of work are paying off.
Mm-hmm.
So I text him completely detached whether he's going to say, yeah, come or not come. I would be fine. And he's like excited. He's like, yeah, please come. I'm like, okay, perfect. And I came and I hear my mind on the way here like, oh, you know, am I spiritual enough for this guy? And I, you know, because he's probably like some raw fruitarian. I'm, you know, I was smoking tobacco 2 weeks ago. Or, you know, I'm like, these stories go through my mind, like, you know, And are they a reflection of my own judgment that I constantly have on all these unconscious people that are like not spiritual enough? It's this still this divide, right? So you hear all these ridiculous stories in the mind, but I no longer, the good news is I'm no longer completely run by them, because I'm like, it's also a point in life, like, well, there's no time for this anymore, you know, because we are doing important work, let's just get together. And so for me, and this is what I want to share, the healing is to completely embody all those voices and go, yeah, yeah, sure, you can all be there, and to meet and to not hide any of them.
Yeah.
And what we did today was actually even better than just talking. He goes, you want to wrestle? And I look at him and I'm like, I have no wrestling background. He's probably going to kick my ass. I'm like, yeah, let's go. Because I feel like what's more vulnerable and connecting is just to also get out of the mind and just to roll around the grass and meet those parts. And I find that is so healing. And so it builds so much trust. If we can all just be imperfect, you know, even as whatever healers or spiritual visionaries, to allow ourselves the human experience and to remind ourselves what the medicine also taught me is like, you didn't come here to be healed or perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, what you said, that unshaming of ourselves, to give ourselves permission to, I messed up so much in the past and I'll mess up again tomorrow, if not tonight, I'm sure. And to say, that's okay, as long as I'm, and that's the big difference, as long as I'm willing, like I'm at a point with my ego, I'm like, and that's how I go into these medicine journeys, I'm like, all right, show me everything. And I think that's the only way you can go into those medicine journeys anyway, because she will show you. And so I am at a point where I'm just like, even sitting with you guys, just show me, you know, show myself, and I'll breathe through the defenses, and I'll just more and more want to just be me, whatever that is.
I remember walking through Melbourne, Australia, and I was looking for a piece of art, Banksy, the street artist. I was looking for this one piece that I was interested in trying to find. And at the time, I was super involved with photography. I had, you know, all my, fancy laptop with all the editing software and, you know, $5,000 worth of cameras in my backpack and all this kind of stuff. And I was down this back alley looking at all this, you know, street art, as is so common in Melbourne. And this business guy walks by in his, you know, well-fitted, tailored suit, and he says, "Hey, you can't be homeless here," and just keeps walking. And I looked at him just so amazed and perplexed. You know, I had been traveling for like 6 months at this point. I was sleeping in a different place pretty much every night, and definitely looked the part.
Mm.
Right? And I just had to laugh, man. You know, there's this idea that we have held in our mind of these things that we perceive, and we're using such a minuscule amount of data to create these ideas, these stories, these assumptions, these sentiments about another.
Yeah.
You know, and they're laughable.
Yeah.
You know, just as laughable as that.
Do you find yourself like judging people like that, like day to day? Do you find your mind going in those directions?
I've had a lot of experience in that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've spent a lot of years coming up with. So I see observation and I see judgment.
Yeah.
Observation is looking at what is revealing itself, what's appearing. Judgment is a mental abstraction and an idea about that observation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It requires more effort to judge.
Yeah.
It requires this whole sentiment and this whole basis of morality and blah, blah, blah. I find more often now that I just stick to observation.
Mm.
And within that is the opportunity to ask questions, to listen. The judgments still happen. They will. The mind has its ways. Yeah. And there's a way of not judging the judgments too, and just looking at that and going, oh, yeah, you think something about this person, don't you? Huh, how irrelevant. Yeah, and just let that float off, you know, and then ask, you know, ask and meet people there.
And I think it's also a way of trying to keep ourselves safe.
Absolutely.
And I mean, if we go in our history that we would grow up maybe meeting 150 people or something in our lifetime, or maybe, you know, how many people would we really meet in those original situations? And now we go around the world with so many impressions of so many people. It must be overwhelming. And so the mind is maybe trying to sort of keep ourselves safe.
Yeah.
Absolutely starts with observing. We're constantly observing, and then perhaps going into, you know, you explain it about going into the judgment.
Yeah.
But where does it become a negative judgment of protecting ourselves? Yeah. I had a friend saying this really potent way of observing in myself whether I'm being defensive or offensive, being not offensive in like,
yeah,
you know, but in the way of, am I looking to defend myself or am I looking for opportunity?
Yeah.
For me, it was a very nice, I find myself still at times when I feel overwhelmed, getting more and more defensive, then to go back within and say, what's life actually trying to offer me, and to become more opportunistic, you know? Okay?
Yeah.
And I find that that switch often puts me in a more positive mindset of, I'm still observing and maybe even judging people, but not so negatively and from a defensive place, from that wounded place.
Yeah.
And that leaves room for that actually leaves room for connection.
Yeah, totally.
Know, just to like, hey man, like, you know, and then to be okay if that person is not in the space they want to connect, and
yeah,
to not feel rejected or unloved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. My experience with that is growing up with a mother, you know, this is like age 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, growing up, almost every afternoon after daycare, we'd go to Whiskey River, this bar way on the other side of town. And I learned very quickly that the longer we're here, the more atrocious people become. There's like, people disintegrate while we're here. They become more and more weird, bizarre. They start fighting each other. They start throwing beer bottles. It's like all of this, what is going on with these people? And I became highly attuned to very subtle cues in people to learn, is this, I didn't understand what drunkenness was, I didn't understand what alcohol was, what was going on with these people, but I realized that there was a point when I couldn't trust them. I realized when there was a point when all of a sudden this person that was so friendly became really, oh, just ugly. And so I developed in that time a highly sensitive capacity to see where a person was. And hearing slight variations in their talking, are they slurring their words? You know, how is this person looking? Are they standing? All these different things, and I found that was for a period of time a superpower that became warped and distorted for a lot of like my teenage years and 20s. When I became so highly focused on, say, a girlfriend and her subtle cues, and I would just question and question and question, is she here with me? Does she care? Am I safe? Does she love me? Is she gonna leave? What is she thinking? Does she like that guy? Am I blah, 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 blah. Crazy. I had this capacity to see these subtle cues, but I was using it to validate my own trauma.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's always a work in progress, but slowly but surely I've found ways and approached the traumas themselves and found ways of being able to then apply that capacity for really specifically seeing subtleties in people to be able to engage that when there's willingness and when I'm there with the capacity to listen, to move through a journey with them. And I find a lot of potency in like ancestral healing, family constellations, NLP is neuro-linguistic programming, and working with the ways in which we can dialogue and get to the root of things. And a lot of times it requires a subtlety of being able to witness somebody in how they say something and realizing what they're saying underneath that. You know, maybe they say one thing, but really that's speaking to something else. And so that these are ways that I've been able to apply that training that I feel life gave me in those more intense times to then utilize that for the space in which there's willingness and my own capacity to listen, to move with people. And I find that that's really key in myself too, in my self-observation, first and foremost, perhaps. I saw you nodding when I was talking about applying that to like relationships and things. Do you have some experience with that?
I can just relate, like trying to like predict and assess something bad's gonna happen, and like a huge part of me is on like threat analysis, trying to like track what they're gonna do and how like deep that is. Yeah. Like for a child in a home with an aggressive father, your survival, you become a professional at tracking the little cues about what's predicting, and then all my attention is just like out there.
Yeah. And there's a very loving intention in that.
Survival,
yeah. It comes from love. Love and care for self, right?
Well, speaking of survival, guys, don't you think, and I hear what you're saying about like not micromanaging evolution, but don't you think Earth is demanding of us to live in more connection with the Earth and in more social harmonic resonance? Like, do you think that Earth is going to allow humanity to continue on its current trajectory in as society? Like, for example, in a body, like when it heals, right, doesn't it burn up and purge out all the tumors and growths and suboptimal cells and less vital tissues? Yeah. Isn't that a part of its healing? Like, isn't the Earth healing, and doesn't that imply that the humans that aren't in attunement socially or with the Earth, like how do you juxtapose that with letting it be and just letting it take its natural course? Like, if there is this such, like, do you think Earth is demanding this of us?
I don't think she's demanding it from an emotional perspective.
But you talk about Earth grief, that's what you talked about at the start, and it's well, doesn't that mean that the Earth is yearning to be attuned to, and society is so not in attunement with the Earth?
Yeah.
So why would that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so, may I?
Yeah.
No, I'm fully with you. There's this paradox, it's both true. It's the yin and the yang. However, the yang, so the feminine and the masculine, right? Those two forces. One is the allowing, the listening, the grieving, the feeling, and allowing that to take inspired action. So that's going through yin towards yang, whilst yang tends to be dominant and tends to always look for solutions because it doesn't trust this murky mass of yin. And I feel it's a dance between both of them. And so let's say if you are a very rational-minded tech billionaire, and you're like, all right, Earth is demanding us to do something, so now we're going to do this project and we'll scale it and this will save the Earth. When I hear that, I cringe, because that's putting ourselves in some superior position as if we need to save the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
We need to save ourselves and trust that through that saving and healing, we'll come into right alignment to continue the life that already wants to flow through us here on Earth. Whether that's going to happen or not, we don't know. And yes, we will take absolutely inspired action to do so, but it's through the pathway, in my view and understanding and senses, of going through that. Because we need to grieve and purge everything that stands in the way for us to actually hear the Earth. And see, for us to say, well, the Earth demands something of us, like how much time do we actually spend attuning and allowing ourselves to be guided? Now, I'm only speaking from experience that the only ever fruitful action I've taken in those last years of doing this work, completely dedicating my life to Earth, there's nothing else that matters to me, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not everything, every action I take. Promise, that's always in my alignment. And any fruitful action has always ever been from a place of expansion. And I have to take myself through continuously through these dark journeys to come out stronger on the other end and feel excited and inspired again to do something. But if I'm coming in from a place of guilt or from a place of I should be doing more,
yeah,
I find myself losing that alignment. That's really what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It's not to say that I'm pro being passive all the time. We should take action, but only if that's like if there's nothing else I would want to do rather do today than create this,
yeah,
then I know that's the right action, because the Earth is full of joy and full of love and full of light, and I have a sense that she is already healed. We're catching up with her, and there is a question like, are we going to make it? So I don't see the Earth as some sad, you know, she feels when I connect her, she feels so alive and vibrant, and she's already in that new level. And she's really wanting us. And what's so beautiful is what also these indigenous shared with me is like, you have the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom and the human kingdom. And traditionally, if ever one of those kingdoms is suffering, the other two step in to help. And I've seen and experienced this, that the plants and the animals actually want to help them whilst we keep destroying them.
And the mycelial kingdom.
And all of those kingdoms. Yeah. And this, like, the humility that came to me when I saw that on the medicine journey is that they are all here just going like, come on. And even though they're suffering, they can see somehow past that. They don't somehow attach to that.
Mm-hmm.
So do think that ultimately the healing is all on us, in ourselves, and then trusting that if we do that work, there will be nothing else we want to do. But still, most people I meet, and you shared it with me today too, are not willing to dedicate their whole life to this. And that can only be because they're still attached to certain parts. And yeah, it will be on us who are fully dedicating our lives already to continue to speak up and inspire others to find that in themselves. But I never ask anyone to join my movement or be like me or take more action for them, because I do trust that they will get the right insights only through that direct connection to spirit, to source, to the Earth.
Mm.
And nothing else will make sense than doing that, right?
Well,
that's...
I just wonder whether true healing can happen in a concrete jungle with all the EMFs and all the pollution and, you know, there's such a momentum to suppress and pollute and cut off humanity's connection that are living in society. And it's like, if that train is going at full speed and it's clear its intent is to sever humans' connection with Source and the Earth, surely there is a strong impetus to catalyze and provide an alternative that actually supports healing. Meaning, do you really think true healing can happen? I mean, true healing can happen in a city.
It's really not up to me to discern how any healing can happen for anyone.
I mean...
That is the thing. What if from the 8 billion people alive today, 7.9 are all going to die? And that is what it will take for humanity to survive. I'm giving you an extreme scenario.
Yeah.
Then so be it. And what if I'm one of those that's going to die? Then so be it. Because this is about the survival of our species, not about the survival of individuals. And so I do believe that, like, you have a divine calling inside of you, and that's all you need to attend to, and that's going to perfectly align with Earth's will and divine will here on Earth. And if you find yourself on some remote island living the best life, the coconuts and durians, and the whole world around you is crumbling, if that's what's going to happen, then that'd be okay, because every other individual soul on Earth, I believe, needs to make those decisions for themselves, and they will if they are willing to do their work. And so us doing podcasts is great, speaking about it. My calling, like I shared with you, is not to go live on a remote island, how comfortable that would be for me. My work is to be in the world,
yeah.
And sometimes I dread it, but that's the only thing that makes me happy, even though it's uncomfortable, because that is my divine calling. So I'm not saying that no action is it. I'm just I trust in the divine unfolding, and I also trust that if we're going to see a lot of suffering as a reflection of this, and yes, there are vast amounts of suppression happening, all part of this game. It's not for us to fight that, because we can't. What we can do is continue to find our own alignment and keep doing this work.
I just figured it's much easier to ride a horse in the direction it's going, meaning the horse is headed towards Earth and, like, you know, how we see, like, that avatar society live in, like, full resonance socially and with the Earth. Like, that's, like, the horse is going in that way. So
yeah.
It just makes sense to me that we ride the horse in the direction it's going 100%. And, like, orient towards, okay,
yeah.
You know, like, cats and dogs can feel an earthquake coming and a tsunami, and they run first. It's like, if that's where things are headed, surely we should, like, you know, orient toward that trajectory.
Yeah.
And it makes me look at the human biological system and, like, what you were mentioning earlier about, like, tumors or an infection. And who are the cells that are basically giving the orders to eliminate that infection or to isolate that infection and to purge it? You know, how is that taking place? And if I see Earth as an organism, a total system, and we are perhaps cells within that system, there are some cells that are, so to speak, responsible for the infection, that are the presence of the infection. And then there's other ones that are actively engaged in transmuting that infection. There's other ones that are providing a support system or a transport to get the good energies or the, you know, whatever is necessary to cleanse that infection. There's some providing the transport. There's some overseeing the process. There's some, distributing the stem cells or whatever within the body to facilitate that healing. And there's so many different roles within that. And really taking up that role that feels like it's in resonance with us, I think, is incredibly important, you know? And I had this experience hiking in Yosemite where there were two trails that paralleled each other for about 5 kilometers, and then they split off. One went east, one went west. And I was convinced that I was on the same, I was on the proper trail that would go east. And I hiked the 5K out and realized that the path went straight west. Fuck. Okay. This was on like a 5-day hike. And to make a 10K round trip diversion was a challenge to my resources that I was carrying with me. And I'm so grateful that I had that experience because it demonstrated to me the way that two separate paths can appear as if they're moving in the same direction, slowly diverging from one another, and there's very little awareness to the person on that path that they're not on the path that goes east, that they're on the path that goes west. And if we take that symbolically and consider the way that some humans, like you said, are moving with the horse, some are not. It's just the reality of it. There are millions of people signed up for the metaverse, for example, for this artificial reality. And there are others plugging directly into Earth,
yeah.
and coming really into connection with what's occurring here. And at some point, and I feel that we've already made some distinct moves, at some point those trails diverge and it becomes very apparent. And there's perhaps an opportunity to hike back and get on the path that, oh shit, this is going in a direction I didn't anticipate. Mm. Okay, let me get back to the point that they split off at, and let me get on the path that I really feel in alignment with. I feel like a lot of people are doing that right now. But it is true that what you're saying, it does feel more harmonious and more obvious to go with the horse. But I feel that there's not just one horse, that there's another horse stampeding towards colonizing Mars, towards, you know, diving into tech, towards creating implants within humans, towards...
So what's the litmus test? What's the acid test to distinguish futility versus what is actually supportive of life?
Yeah.
And it's deeply frustrating for me that not many people can call a spade, and logically, factually put a human being in civilized society and notice, oh, it's disintegrative. The human being is disintegrating in society.
Yeah.
It's scary that not many people can recognize it's factually disintegrative, but yet everyone fuels it and energizes the beast that is killing them, and it's scary. And humans cannot survive in the future unless we're attuned with the earth and in social harmonic resonance. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just facts.
Yeah.
And everyone's living in a state that is like fragmented socially and like cut off from the earth. So like, it's just, let's just be logical and just be like, okay, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But then in the next sentence, everyone's just happy living their life, like fueling the societal system and just happy with it. And it's just deeply frustrating.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you, because I'm 100% on board with what you say, but what's your point in saying, can humans survive in a city? Do you feel you need to take more action, or what's your point of saying this? And I say this really respectfully, because I feel I'm with you with the frustration and all of it.
Yeah.
But like, what else can we do is my question to you, but to show up for our own inspiration and alignment and to take action from there. Like, you feel inspired to build community, fantastic. I feel inspired to do what I do. Just I don't know how you called it, like, how do you recognize it? For me, it's like, I know the feeling of that true alignment and the true love of Earth that I feel like in being with you today. I recognize you as a brother immediately in that, or as someone on this path. And when I speak to someone, another person, I often don't recognize that, or I recognize the potential. But what can I do? I've learned not to fix, heal, or change them. But what can I do then but to accept them, including my own family? It's been heartbreaking, but I have to trust that, you know, this is their soul's path. Ultimately, is why they came here, right? I have no control outside, and I do trust that can take me to miraculous places and plant a lot of seeds in the meantime.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, and I resonate with that, and it's just difficult for me. Yeah, it's just difficult. Yeah, it's just like you mentioned at the start, that indigenous woman in the ceremony.
Yeah.
You know, my natural tendency is to like fight, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's difficult to just accept. But
what if you can't fight it in the way you're used to?
What if I can't fight it?
What if the beast is too strong, man?
Well, that's why I love Rupert Sheldrake's morphic resonance and morphogenetic fields, because
it gives you a path where you know you can create whatever joyful situation, and that will be the true strength, and others will change because of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's produce the example, and then that becomes more spontaneously arousable and accessible and, you know, in the collective.
And there's no need to fight there, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm with you, man. Like, but it just sucks. You need a boxing bag, you know, for this. Like, I know. But in that moment of rage and anger, are we creating more of a genetic field of healing, or are we like, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the rage. That's why I love the play fight.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I love tapping into these primal emotions and allowing them to be there. But ultimately, I just know for myself, when I'm all frustrated and raged, like, I'm just not in my power.
Yeah.
And then people laugh at me, you know, instead of like being inspired or whatever, what I'm saying. It's like, it's that. But it has its place. I do feel the rage to move through it.
Yeah. And what you're speaking of with the morphic resonance, I feel is one and the same with what we were talking about earlier of like what's medicinal for me is a potential medicine for people, you know, and by cultivating that within myself in that field of morphic resonance, for example, that can become accessible to others.
Yeah, and what I'm proposing is that maybe the next sort of degree of a deeper healing does require earth attunement and social harmonic resonance.
I absolutely agree.
And I, you know, like everyone's done their modalities and yada yada yada, but what if the next stage is to really, you know what I mean, like properly is in a social context that is like purely harmonically resonant and in attunement with all facets of the ecology. What if that's, you know, the next part of healing that is calling us? And what if that's deeper healing?
Yeah. Where is that? I love that. And so where is your inspiration there? Like, maybe you're the guy that needs to kick everyone's ass because you live already fully in the jungle. Maybe you need to come to my house and go, you know what, what's up with this, you know? Like, I'm not saying that you're wrong in any shape or form. Maybe it's like that's what Earth is calling you for now, because, you know, you have certain, you climb coconut trees, you know? And so to be, this is brotherhood to me, to not be afraid, to not go by those polite societal standards, like, oh, you can never hold someone accountable, to build a level of trust where we can also actively, you know, keep each other in check, but in a way that I'm receptive and feel understood. But I went on this fast and I was going to go 3 weeks and I had a friend of mine sort of coaching me through it. But at some point I just knew there's something really wrong. I got to drink coconut water and take an enema.
Yeah.
And that was my body telling me. And I shared that with her and I did, not such relief. And she just went, you know, and also maybe it should have been a man coaching me, you know. But anyway, she went at me like, oh, you know, you really need to show more discipline. You're doing the wrong thing. Like, what is this about? And I just knew deep in my heart, like, no, this is not the parasites talking, telling me to drink coconut water. I'm doing this because really what I want is the best health. And it turned out I actually feel that my gut was clogged up. And I was dehydrated and the coconut water was rehydrating me and the enema was actually moving me to place. And I was always going to go into some liver shock. So I'm so happy I listened to myself. So anyone can hold me accountable, especially if I ask for their advice. But at the end of the day, I am responsible. And if I end up in the metaverse accidentally, that's still my fault. I don't want to. You know, I'm on this track with the horse. I'm with you guys. But at the end of the day, I don't want people to sort of like, you know, criticize me and be like, because ultimately I'm committed to finding my path to spirit and to source, and also to make mistakes on the path, you know. But I don't know if this helps, but I just want to say, like, I love your rage and your fire, and I hope you can find an expression, because there are a lot of people who need also this masculine guidance, you know. It's not all about let me come and sit and hug you. That's kind of what I bring, but it's also sometimes we need both, right?
Yeah. And what I hear in what you share, James, is the actual like structural integrity of a living reality of it.
That's all I'm proposing.
Yeah, because there's something beyond
where people can come and be in and not be freaking tirated by me, but but you know,
a little here and there.
No. But yeah, like all I'm like, just imagine. I don't know. For me, that's just the future. So,
to me, what I hear is like after. Have you broken a bone?
Yeah.
Have you had a cast?
Yeah.
There's things that happen after you get the cast removed. Right? There's the rehabilitation of, like, I broke my elbow and had my whole arm in a cast for I don't know how long, way too long, and it atrophied, right? And so the healing was done. I had healed, like, the joint no longer needed healing, but then there was a re-strengthening that needed to happen. There was a practical living reality to using this healed arm. You know, and healing will always take shape throughout our lifetimes. There's always aspects of it. So the metaphor like has some limitations, but once that cast comes off, then what? And what I'm hearing you speak to is the actual practical steps forward beyond that time of having a cast on and really being limited in our expression, but then what is it to actually continue living as a harmonious society? Because that is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the actuality of it.
Yeah.
Is how I would frame that. That's the actual living reality of being on Earth.
Yeah.
And in resonance with Earth and this whole experience that we're having. And actually doing that in a way that is participatory, that is in connection, that is in, you know, quote unquote, right relation, as the phrase is, and that is taking care of the many facets that is me. And that does require structure. That does require a way of approach. It does require standing in certain frequencies. It does require acknowledging things as they are and finding connection and finding these aspects, these core truths of ourselves, that without that we will diverge, and we have societally.
Yeah, you're spot on. I just imagine if there was like a father and a son, like a young boy, and like the boy is afraid of swimming, right? But the father wants to attempt to support the child to swim. The father's not gonna, you know, like there's an impetus toward that is all. It's just toward that. And for me, it just doesn't make sense. If the ship is burning, why continue to find comfort in a burning ship? Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't really add up to me.
Right.
And yeah, it's hard to voice this without frustration, but like, yeah.
And then that's great, and I'm fully with you. It's crazy. So let's say someone is listening to this or to you, and they are finding themselves doing that, and they do have a willingness, they do have something, I want to change.
Yeah.
Like, what would be, if we're going to be practical, like, where to start for these people? Like, what would you tell them as someone who 10 years ago left, you know, Australia, and you came here already knowing what a lot of people are starting to realize today? Like, I think these are probably valuable things to share with the world.
Well, I don't know if my audience is what you're talking about. Like, I guess my attempt is, we've seen in the past 10 years fasting become a lot more normalized and mainstream. Yeah. All these healing modalities have become a lot more normalized and mainstream and adopted by a lot more people. Mm. All I'm like wanting is like earth living and like social coherence is to be more normalized and accessible and available for people to experience, and then for people to have an experience in that. And then, you know, people do fast, and people tell their friends about how beneficial fasting was. I just look forward to the day when, you know, earth living and attunement with the ecology and like social harmonic resonance is just more commonplace as we've seen fasting and breath work and yoga become more commonplace. That's like what I'm like wanting.
But aren't they part of that? Isn't that already a sign of what you're speaking of?
Aren't Somewhat. They already a part
of more harmonic living?
Yeah, it's all headed in that direction.
It's like you're speaking of the highest level of Himalayan yoga in some ashram there, and we're talking about people now going to yoga barn. But we can't expect, I guess, everyone to immediately go to the Himalayas and join it at that level. And that's where I find solstice in this realization that when we welcome people to our school, we take them into our food forest. And we're like, no, let's go barefoot. And they had never walked barefoot in nature.
Yeah.
And that experience, which to me is like, that's like I wake up in the morning, I go barefoot into nature, is like transformational for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's cute and it's nice. And I get frustrated. I'm like, come on, let's just dance around this fire together. But to also, I guess, to accept and to acknowledge that this is where everyone's at. Are we going to have enough time? Is it all going to happen? I don't know. Maybe the whole universe is watching like some Hollywood flick. But what more can we do?
Yeah.
And I'm being practical than just to be us and to share and to, you know, to do exactly what we are already doing. And then to see, you know, take Wim Hof, he spent 30 years of his life doing the inner work with his breathing and his eyes, and the whole of Holland, you know, I'm from the same country as him.
Yeah.
They called him mad because I used to watch him on television. People were laughing at him. And now all of a sudden, in the time when everyone was ready, it was his job to bring, let's say, breath work to a mainstream audience. And he did.
Mm.
And then someone else will come along and take a step further. But his core message is always like your message, is resonance with nature. But even that, most of those people don't want to hear. They just want the breathing technique. They don't want to hear exactly. But still, they get to see some of it, and hopefully it infuses them with that little... You know, that is my hope, that those seeds are planted. And sometimes, you know, when you plant a tree and then for a long time it's not doing much, and then I go away for a few weeks, this tree is really taking off. You know, maybe we're going to find these explosions of canopy.
And I find something...
Thanks, you know.
Yeah.
I try.
I find accessibility to be a really key factor too, right? Is like, have you ever been around somebody who's really entrenched in a modality, and they have all these phrases and all this terminology and all this jargon around it? And I've been in these situations where I listen to this person talk and I'm like, do you realize that like half of the words you just used, nobody on the fucking planet has any idea what you're saying? And it's completely inaccessible. And some people get off on that. It's like, oh, listen to me and all my verbosity, you know? Check me out. Oh, I have, you know, leagues on you. Some people get off on that. But a lot of times it's kind of just an unintentional discrepancy between, like, what this person has spent, obviously, like, perhaps years studying, and then their capacity to make it relatable to others. And I find that when things are made very relatable, people have an immense amount of depth that they're able to dive into and explore, you know? And it's, you kind of touch on it with walking barefoot. It's a nice step into it. But while they're barefoot, they have an immense portal that every human is capable of diving into if it's made reasonably accessible to them and they have the, you know, even a slight interest in going there, you know. And I find that what you're speaking of, being in resonance, in social harmonic resonance, and being, you know, earth attuned and really getting into it in a real genuine way and an experiential way that plants a seed deep within us, that's extremely accessible to people, especially when it's held in a way that they feel, you know, reasonably safe, and it's you know, not got all this, you know, metaphorical jargon around it to make it inaccessible and like this, wow, this is really some special kind of thing over here. This physicist is talking about this nonsense that I could never relate to. It's like, oh yeah, I've eaten a banana before, and then just diving into like, let's check the, you know, things can really be made accessible.
Yeah, and on that, your first voice message to me, I remember it struck me how articulate you were about, you spoke about these very complex things in a way that...
Social harmonic resonance.
Yeah, you had very beautiful words for them and somehow coming out of your mouth. And for me, because I already resonated with these things, I didn't even need to hear them as much, but it was so nice to hear them as a remembering and as a resonance. And I just wanted to go, hey, you should tell more people about this. Because you have that logic that's very needed.
Yeah.
And so maybe, you know, I would encourage you as a friend to always speak about this and to not underestimate how many people are now ready to hear what you have to share.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe part of your frustration is also like not feeling heard. And I'm like, oh,
you're spot on. I'm frustrated that I haven't been able to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so
Yeah.
Imagine how the seed feels as it's like soaking in the wet soil, trying to just like squeeze that first root out in those little sprout, you know, leaves, and how frustrated it might feel recognizing the immense tree that it just dropped from and going like, I'm just trying to get this root in the soil. And, you know, and then by the time it does and it sort of gets established and it's got some things going on, it's like, oh, okay. That's what that was all about.
Oh, well, thank God for you guys. Oh, I don't have an aneurysm over here.
Yeah. Beautiful. There's definitely great healing in sharing these things with people who are seemingly on similar paths. And knowing like we're not alone in this, and all our perspectives are needed.